Score, the podcast. The only show taking you inside the studios of the world's most celebrated composers and musicians.
Coming to you this week from Studio City inside of Tina Guo's home studio. This is Score the Podcast.
Studio Guo.
This is Score the Podcast. I'm your host, Kenny Holmes, back with Robert Kraft.
Yeah.
He's been gloating around after a couple weeks ago his win and name that score.
You know, it's funny how just there's certain moments in your life you'll never forget.
Was that one of them?
The first time I won name
Mark
that score.
Mark Mothersbaugh, winning in front of Mark Mothersbaugh.
That was just a seminal kind of pivotal point for me.
All right, well, I'm going to put you to the test later on in the show.
That is coming up. We're also joined every week by, you hear him over there, our executive producer, Matt Schrader.
Yep. Hey,
Matt.
We got a new drop today thanks to John Powell last week.
Sounds like 5 pounds of cheese.
Oh, it sure does sound like 5 pounds of cheese.
Yeah, that, of course, is referencing our beautiful Name That Score score.
How dare he?
Yeah.
Sounds like 5 pounds of cheese.
It sure does.
That could be for anything, though. That's a great drop. Our guest today, as we mentioned, we're here inside her beautiful home studio, Grammy-nominated rock star cellist. You've seen her in the Hans Zimmer Live World Tour, which is now on Netflix. And she's featured in dozens of film scores, including Wonder Woman, Dunkirk, Sherlock Holmes, Inception, Iron Man 2. And she's also a nominee of the Brit Awards.
Yeah, she's nominated for Female Artist of the Year by the 2018 Classic Brit Awards. That celebrates the best of classical and crossover musicians for her last, her most recent album, solo album,
Game On. Yeah, which we're going to talk about, and she may even play a little bit for us. We have her.
Yeah, we'll see if we can hook everything up
here. Plus, we have another episode of Behind the Score. We're going to get to that in just a bit. And we're going to play Name That Score with
Name
Tina.
Name That Score.
What's the topic today, Matt?
Let's see. What is it? It is movies with a strong female lead. So all of these films have some A-list actress running the story, basically.
Fantastic.
Awesome.
And maybe we'll have... really iconic.
Do you think that it's even possible that I could stretch my lead?
I know
two.
You're going with this. I don't know about that.
Well, it's
that.
Not going to be stretched because you lost to John Powell last week.
Okay. I
predict Robert's going to get a bunch of these.
Yes.
You never know. I've been practicing.
I wanted to bring up, because in our second episode with Harry Gregson-Williams, we talked about Spielberg having this secret roundtable meeting that was rumored to be about a Leonard Bernstein biopic. And, of course, now it's come out that it's officially happening, and it's going to be directed by and starring Bradley Cooper.
Remarkable.
And there's a whole list of Hollywood A-list producers involved as well. Steven Spielberg, Martin Scorsese, among many others.
Mm-hmm. And there's a couple of them, right? Aren't there?
Jake Gyllenhaal already has announced his Leonard Bernstein biopic, which I think is called The American, which, of course... this often happens in Hollywood. You get two pictures going on the same track, racing for the same destination. And
I was
going
to say, is that common?
It is common. In fact, the only time I know that it worked out beautifully is I know that Ed Zwick and Steven Soderbergh were both making a movie that was destined to be the story of Traffic, which was kind of about drug cartels in Mexico. And they decided to collaborate and work together on the story.
I was going to say, do you think one announcement came because of the other, and they're like, oh, crap, we better hurry up?
Yeah. I wonder. And certainly
you've seen that with certain, the Steve Jobs.
Janis
that were really
Joplin
close.
Pictures that have all been. Yeah. So this is
and
a
I know there
bit
was
of...
some conversation about Edward Snowden, too. When all of that news came out, there were a couple studios that were pursuing that. I think one of them dropped out.
But I think this makes, of course, sense that a lot of people would be interested, because Leonard Bernstein is a truly fascinating and legendary character, both in music and in American culture and history. He was really pivotal.
Can we break down? So part of this, you have interest from multiple studios here in making this film. We could probably, Kenny, I know you've been doing a little bit of research into these things and kind of his impact, but what can we look for in this movie?
Well, he of course scored two huge legendary films. One he even got an Oscar nomination for On the Waterfront, and then he also wrote the Broadway musical and then went on to do the film score for West Side Story.
West Side Story. Just these are epic. I actually just saw, maybe a month ago, I saw a live orchestra to picture version of On the Waterfront at Northridge, CSUN. And truly remarkable to hear that music, because for anybody that sees On the Waterfront, which was 1956, that was the release date of the film, mm-hmm. you hear it, unmistakable precursor of the West Side Story score. He was very influenced by, first of all, the tritone. We talk about the devil's interval, and you can hear it.
What is that? Can you define that for people that don't understand what that is?
So the perfect interval, in as we've often talked about, overtone systems and the relationship of vibrations, 1/5, boom, ding, is the perfect, wonderful interval for all music. In fact, in Western music,
this is
music,
a music theory.
Music theory,
Western, almost mathematical.
Right. Western, exactly. It is mathematical, and Western music is boom, ding, boom. That's very mm-hmm. much the way Western music is. The most dissonant interval in Western music, and the interval that's mathematically the farthest apart, and is also often called the devil's interval because it is so dissonant. If you take
just doom, unpleasant to doom, the ears,
and you flat the fifth, the doom, 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 doom. You can already hear that it's kind of scary
gloomy
music, and boom, doom, doom, doom. So beautifully in West Side Story, it's a big part. Boo doop, boo doo doop, boo doo, boo doo doop, doot, doo doo doot.
Yeah.
Or Maria, forgive me.
Interesting.
The Simpsons?
The Simpsons. You're absolutely right.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So I think that was a big part of Leonard Bernstein.
He wasn't a film composer,
not
mostly.
Not
he did
much.
A few films,
did a
but
couple,
just a couple, right?
But
there's actually a really cool story about how he became famous. He was a struggling music student who went to a summer camp thing, and then he was looking for work. He somehow got recommended for a job as the assistant conductor for the New York Phil, and on a day that they had a guest composer coming on, that composer, Bruno Walter, got sick, and he got called that morning and said, hey, can you fill in?
To conduct,
and it happened to be a syndicated show on CBS radio, and everyone heard it, and then the next day he was on front page news on the New York Times, and just overnight.
That's cool, yeah.
Career was launched, and it was like many people that happened to, he was destined to be famous. He was famous for being famous. He had certainly, he'd been an outstanding music student at Harvard, and then this moment where his conducting was truly brilliant, and then what he did, not only musically, was so significant, but Leonard Bernstein did a wonderful series on public television called The Young People's Concerts.
Yes.
Where he taught music to, ostensibly to the kids in the audience, but it really was so thorough and so interesting and made so palatable that a wide audience tuned in. Those concerts and those lectures are to this day classic, revered musical education material.
And that probably brought him to the public eye more than anything, because back then you didn't have 80,000 shows to watch or Netflix. So if something was, that was just the program that was on. Did you watch the program?
Yeah.
That was, so everyone was probably tuning into that, so, and really getting an idea of who he was.
He was legendary. And it's interesting that not only are they doing two movies about him, but his daughter, Jamie Bernstein, has just written a book that's come out maybe 2 weeks ago called Famous Father Girl. And it's the story of her father, and I'm looking forward to reading it because...
I'll bet she's involved in one of these films as well, then.
Boy, and that's... You've come so back now, to one of the big topics, which is which one will
the race
family
is on.
Bless.
Right.
Yeah. The race is on. Yeah.
And it's interesting because that was the first exposure for a lot of film composers, seeing somebody on TV or hearing them on the radio playing classical music, modern classical music sometimes, or at least modern performances of classical music. So we've heard a lot of people that have mentioned his name kind of in passing as someone that was influential growing up. And of course, that's where John Williams, I think, first played piano on West Side Story.
Oh, you're right.
So there's a tie-in to this industry, even though he's not purely a film composer.
Yeah, and I wonder who will end up, whichever film goes, it'll be curious to see who gets the nod to score the Leonard Bernstein biopic.
And John Williams has...
Maybe John Williams.
Well, he said himself that he was done, I think, right? But I guess a lot of people say they're done and then they get a job and they come back.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be the perfect one. He really would. It'd be an American legend.
Be something kind of poetic in there, too.
Yeah, yeah, an American legend saluting an American legend, and certainly after having played those scores.
Speaking of scoring, we have had a lot of people make fun of our theme for Name
Sounds
That
Sounds like 5 pounds of cheese.
For Name That Score. So we were thinking, I know we have a bunch of aspiring composers and actual
and perspiring composers,
credited composers listening to this show. So if you think you can make us a better theme, give it a crack.
But I don't know. I don't know how people can top this. I'm just saying.
I mean, we did commission it for $19 on the internet.
Uh-huh.
So
we're all in on this one. But if someone,
if you think you can do something, maybe we can have rotating themes for the show.
Show theme. We'll give them a shout out.
Yeah. So if you like your version better, if you think you can write some, send it in. Maybe we'll.
And I also would suggest I thought maybe what we were going to do is ask people to send in themes, as in not musical themes, but Name That Score every week has a theme, like famous movies with women in the lead, or famous sci-fi movies or war movies. I thought maybe we could get from our fabulous and devoted audience any ideas you have for Name That Score.
Look at Robert getting cocky after his mother's ball.
Wouldn't that
win.
Be great? I'm trying
anybody
to think.
Can submit it now.
Movies starring pets.
Oh.
See, I'm already stretching way out there.
We did animals.
We won the
animals.
Game with animals.
Well,
so
I'm
really
just looking for an excuse to get Elephant Man back into consideration. Well, so if you have ideas for Name That Score and a topic for us to do the contest, don't hesitate to send those. Also, where would they send their recommendations?
You could probably just tweet it at us.
Yeah, tweet it to us.
At Score the Podcast.
At Score the Podcast.
And maybe we'll run your theme in our game in lieu of Matt and his cheese.
And you know what you could do? Hey.
5 pounds of cheese.
You know what? That's not... that's.
It would be amazing.
Awesome.
Pounds of cheese.
Kenny, what do you think of that theme we have right now?
Awesome. It's my enthusiastic drop.
Yeah.
Don't make fun of that.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to play Name That Score a little later, and as Matt said, films with a strong female lead. And coming up after the break, our guest is coming in. You know her from Hans Zimmer's tour. She's the star of the show, rocking it out, and she's even going to play a little bit for us coming up, too. It's Tina Guo. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Hey, Matt Schrader here. We're back to the show in 15 seconds, but a quick thank you to everyone who's been telling a friend about Score the Podcast. We're one of the fastest growing entertainment podcasts out there right now, and that's thanks to you, telling a friend. You're probably thinking of somebody else right now that'd enjoy the show. If it's safe to do so, hit pause and let them know about Score the Podcast. It helps keep this show going. Now back to the show.
Hey, we're back with Tina in her fabulous studio and living quarters.
Hello, thank you. Thank you guys for being here.
Oh, thanks for inviting us in and joining the show. Of course, you may have seen Tina if you've watched Hans Zimmer's live concert on Netflix. She's basically the star of the show.
Oh,
rocking it with the cello.
You've definitely seen her if you've seen that concert special, even if you don't know. But he does introduce you, which was a cool thing.
Yeah,
in the special.
Very appreciated, yes.
And actually, not only the concert special, I've seen Tina live with Hans, which is also a treat.
Which show did you
likewise.
Come to?
I've seen a couple. I think the one that I had the best seats for was The Shrine.
Okay,
and,
in L.A.
In L.A.
Was that the last show? The
last
one.
Show on The Shrine, where we actually were amazed by, it was a little bit like the Beatles were playing downtown. I mean, I don't know if you were outside before the show, but crowds, there were police on
you
horseback.
Mentioned that, yeah.
It was like, are we going to see the Rolling Stones live?
It seemed like it was Tina featuring Hans.
Come on. Well, I had no idea what was going on. I was just in catering, eating as much as possible before the show.
Craft service.
We saw the show too at the, I think it was the first United States show right before Coachella.
Microsoft Theater.
Yeah, we started and finished in L.A., the bookends.
Yeah.
It was awesome. Yeah.
The crowd was packed with composers, too. I think we were standing in line next to James Newton Howard getting popcorn. It's like, oh, Maestro, go ahead. After you.
Oh, didn't he come on stage in that show for Dark Knight? I think he came up for a portion.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I was going to say, James Newton Howard sort of looking at you saying, hey, man, do you have a ticket? You know, I'm trying to get in. I'm hoping that
it's sold out.
Right. You know, you are the star of the show. Of course, apart from Hans, it's really you front and center. And I know that a lot of people will wonder, how did you get the gig? How did you meet Hans? Where did you meet Hans?
Well, I've told the story a lot. I don't know if Hans has heard the story himself, but so this goes way back in the day to, I believe it was 2009. So at that time,
I was four.
I'm 32 years old. So I had left college already at that point. And I was struggling musician, session musician. And I really was having trouble getting my career off the ground. I was still playing mostly classical music, classical cello. I worked on a few, you know, small scoring projects here and there. But yeah, I had a lot of free time on my hands as a mostly unemployed cellist. And I thought like, oh, it'd be amazing to play like metal, electric cello, industrial metal, you know, and I couldn't get anyone to take me seriously because of course, if you don't have a product ready to sell and ready to demonstrate what it is that you're thinking in your own head, it's impossible for other people to understand what you're saying. If you just tell people, oh, I do this, and they just, you know, they're like, oh, that's nice, whatever, you know. So at that point in my life, I had about like $6,000 saved. That's it. Like my entire life savings.
Did you have both axes, electric and acoustic?
I had an electric cello at that point and an acoustic. It was my very first one. So not White Walker, the white one I have now, but the very first Yamaha electric cello that I purchased. And so I took the money that I saved. I found a music video team. I begged them to do it at cost. Like nobody made anything. So we got a lot of volunteers. I found like a location for free, a coffin case. So they're the company that makes those coffin-shaped guitar and bass cases. And they also have these cool, like, distortion pedals. One I used to use was called the Blood Drive. And it's like a distortion pedal shaped like a coffin. And so they were so kind. Johnny Coffin was so kind to let us shoot there for free, you know, so we were able to do that. So anyway, it took like 2 or 3 months because I did most of the production and stuff myself because I couldn't afford to hire anyone. And so we got it all put together. And my goal at the time, because I was obsessed and still am obsessed with Rammstein, the German industrial metal band, and I thought, oh, maybe if I put out a music video like playing electric cello and being like all metal, maybe like Rammstein or Metallica or somebody will see it and then they'll like ask me to play with them. So that was kind of like the mentality that I was in at the time. I knew about the soundtrack world, but that really wasn't my focus. I wanted to play metal. I wanted to tour and do that. So we put the video out. It's called Queen Bee. It is on YouTube. Unfortunately, it got rated 18 and over only, so you do have to sign in. There's no nudity. It's just the artistic in the breakdown section. Because I figured, you know, bees don't wear clothing, so I'm covered in gold body paint. I am covered, but it's very artsy fartsy. So we did the video, and a week after the video came out, Hans saw the video. So he had his assistant at the time, Andrew, contact me via, somehow they found my phone number. I guess they, you know, have their methods. And he called and said, oh, we would like for you to come in to work on this project. I'm calling from Hans Zimmer's office. And Hans knows I love him very much dearly. But at that time, I actually didn't know who he was because I wasn't, you know, I just didn't, I was completely in my own world, like, metal and also classical music. So I said, who? Okay, I'll come in. And the next week I went in and he was having lunch upstairs in the back building with Guy Ritchie. And they were working on Sherlock Holmes. So I literally just walked in and I was like, oh, okay, I guess they're working on a project. And he said, oh, we're working on Sherlock Holmes. Would you be interested in recording cello solos? I'm like, oh my God, of course. And it just kind of happened like
that's
that.
That's fantastic.
It's a crazy story. And then also John Debney, he also saw the video. And he wrote to me on Facebook. He's like, hi, I'm John Debney. I'm working on Iron Man 2. I saw your video. Do you want to do that? Because it's kind of like electric guitar, but different. You know, do you want to record for Iron Man 2? And of course, and I was incredibly grateful because honestly, after shooting that that video, I had spent every penny that I had. So I didn't even know how I was going to pay for food or rent for the next month. So thankfully I was rescued, you know, a couple weeks later, suddenly getting these jobs working like in soundtracks. And so it really was unexpected.
Sounds like it paid off.
It did. And it's
a wonderful story.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It was really crazy. It was just like, oh, oops. Okay.
It just goes to show you how powerful the internet can be.
It is interesting. Do you remember, Kenny, when we interviewed Hans for the documentary, he was talking about how sometimes he and, you know, his various composers that are over at Remote Control would sometimes get caught up just going through YouTube videos.
Or how about when we were at Quincy Jones' house, when we talked to him, we spent, I think, an hour and a half after the interview. He's like, check out this guy. I'm scouting him. He's this amazing musician from China. And we're going to...
I've got two words for you. Jordan Bieber. Justin Bieber.
Jordan
Bieber. Well, Jordan Bieber is the guy that became Justin Bieber. But
but that's true. Didn't Usher find Justin Bieber?
Yeah. Usher and... Scooter
it's
Bond.
Crazy, the new world for all of this stuff.
Definitely. It's an amazing opportunity, I think.
We're
going to
have Jordan Bieber on in a little while.
Our next guest next week. We have a little treat coming up after the break. This is going to be our first live musician performance.
Uh-oh.
Okay, Tina's got the White Walker. Is that what
Yes, his name is White Walker. He's my electric cello.
White Walker is here. Tina's going to shred a little bit for us, and we're going to talk about her album Game On right after the break. But first, Behind the Score.
Behind the Score, the inside stories from Hollywood's greatest filmmakers and composers.
One of the things unique to big cities, and Los Angeles in particular, is the use of billboards to advertise upcoming movies. On any given day, you might see 25 billboards for different films and TV shows. While driving from the Valley, where the Universal, Disney, and Warner Brothers studio lots are, to Culver City and Sony Pictures, or Century City and Fox Studios. It's an industry town, which means, unlike other cities, it makes a lot of sense to advertise on good old-fashioned billboards.
It can be kind of disconcerting.
That's composer Trevor Rabin, known for his scores to Remember the Titans, Con Air, and Enemy of the State.
The billboards are sometimes up before you've literally before you've started writing the music. And not only are they up, but the release date is there.
You spend about a day or two panicking more and thinking that you're never going to get it done.
Composer Lauren Balf of The Crown and this summer's upcoming blockbuster Mission Impossible Fallout says sometimes the easiest thing to do is not look at the billboards.
So you're stuck inside, and then when you do go out, it's probably to get on the plane to go to London, and then you see the commercial. I think 10 years ago I used to panic and worry about deadlines, the whole structure of things, and now I don't, because if I do, I'm not focusing on music.
Blocking out billboards, a strategy Rabin's used too.
You do see the billboards up, certainly before you finish doing the film, and with a release date there, and you drive past it thinking, I don't want to look at that billboard because I'm just about to go home to start writing the music.
It is kind of exciting when you see billboards and things are becoming real.
Composer Bear McCreary of The Walking Dead, Outlander, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and The Cloverfield Paradox says he prefers to be finished scoring by the time the ad campaigns begin.
Sometimes it's the inverse, where I'll be pencils down on a show and then like 3 or 4 months later, it's announced. And then you see a first billboard and people go, dude, have you heard about this show, Black Sails? It's like pirates. That's cool. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be cool. I not only did it, I finished it already. And I've just been waiting for people to know what it is. Like, it's actually kind of exciting for me. Like, people are going to get to hear it. We're almost at the point where it becomes real.
For more stories behind the score, read Score, the interviews based on the international hit film Score, a film music documentary featuring raw insight from Hans Zimmer, James Cameron, Quincy Jones, Randy Newman, Trent Reznor, and many more. Score, the interviews, available now at score-movie.com.
We're back here with Tina Guo, rock star cellist, and she's suited up. She's standing with the White Walker, and we're going to have our first musical instrument played here on Score the Podcast, which we're very excited
about. Pretty great way to debut this portion. Oh, I love that. It's so nice.
Record all of these. We can have little drops now.
Yeah.
Dramatic transitions in the show.
Beautiful.
Tina, you did this album called Game On, mm-hmm. which features classic video games. Were you a gamer?
You know, growing up, I did play with my little brother. We played a lot of Super Mario and Zelda, and also Sonic the Hedgehog, I think. Mm-hmm. And then before that, we had the Atari. And then most recently, I bought a Nintendo Switch.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was playing a lot of Zelda Breath of the Wild, but I have a very compulsive, obsessive personality. So I started playing like 8-9 hours in a row. So I put it away. It's been in the closet for a long time.
Did those themes stick early on? Did you recognize? Because you said you weren't into the film music thing, but did the video game...
Yeah, I think some of like the you know, like Super Mario, everybody probably, or like Tetris, you know, it's a very, very universal themes. And so I thought for this album, it'd be interesting to do, of course, like more my own versions of it. And so it was orchestrated for a full symphony, choir, and a metal band all mushed together. And then some of the tracks also feature some more exotic instruments, a couple of guest singers. And so it was really, really super fun actually to turn these, some of the more simple themes like Tetris, which I believe is the closing piece on the album. It's, you know, it's a very, very simple traditional old Russian folk tune, but we turn it into like a big symphonic melodramatic piece with like all kinds of like fake out endings, you know. So
can we hear that one?
Oh, well, actually, well, okay. So I don't have the backing track or the band or the orchestra or anything. So Tetris might sound a little silly, but maybe I'll play another melody.
Okay.
And hopefully it's semi-recognizable from a pretty popular game.
All right, okay. Let's do it.
Let's see. How's it? Can you hear that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I don't.
No?
But I'm sure our audience will.
It sounds so cinematic to me, too.
Okay, that was Skyrim.
Skyrim. I've never played Skyrim, so there you have
it. Okay.
I'm more of an old school gamer. Do you have something old school?
Yes. Okay, so this is from a Game Boy version of this particular game. So like an old.
Yes.
You know? Okay.
Now we're talking.
And this might be a little, I don't know. It might be difficult. Right here. A lot of notes. It might not like.
It's fantastic.
Okay, here's the animated for the same series.
Oh, it's ringing. What is that?
Come on.
Pokemon. Yeah. Oh, there we go. No, okay.
No, the first thing was like from the Red and Blue Gym Battle from like the old Game Boy. Version.
Wasn't the cartridge red and blue too? Mm-hmm. I remember that.
Yeah. So we try to take like some of the more well-known themes, because I know technically that Pokemon theme song wasn't in the original games, but that's kind of what everybody associates with Pokemon. So we mix that with some of the more like the original music from the game that was a little bit, you know, more
amazing.
Difficult to
and amazing to hear. Sounds coming out of the instrument too.
Oh, thank you. I'm playing this through my new
Helix. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's Robert. Is it fun for you to play these things, because with video games, everyone connects to their childhood in some fashion.
Yeah, definitely.
When you do like a concert, is there a different feel, do you think, from when people are kind of thinking back? Is it?
I think so. Hopefully it does make people nostalgic and, you know, in a good way. And like for me, definitely Zelda, I think, is probably the most, because, you know, every time you turn on the game, or my brother was always playing Zelda on the Super Nintendo, so that was definitely.
Can you do Zelda?
Sure. Let me see. I usually play this on the acoustic, but here's the main theme.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, hopefully that was slightly
beautiful.
Oh yes, that one brings me back. What was it? Ocarina of Time.
Mm-hmm,
oh
mm-hmm.
Man, that game! I spent half of my life on that game.
Oh man.
Okay, we're gonna take a quick break, and so we can get
reset.
Tina sat back down. We'll be right back.
Hey, Matt Schrader here, director of Score, a film music documentary. For the latest news from the film music world, follow us on Facebook. Just search Score, a film music documentary. Or let us know who you want to hear next on the show on Twitter, at Score the Podcast.
Well, Welcome back to Score the Podcast. We're here with Tina Guo, Grammy-nominated rock star cellist. You hear her playing the Wonder Woman theme there.
Badass Wonder Woman.
From her viral YouTube rockin' video, if you haven't seen that yet. That's like its own film.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
So we had a little unorthodox approach to our show because Tina just rocked it out for us in that last block. Thank you for doing that. Mm-hmm. But we are now seated back down. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned a little earlier that you started playing piano at a young age, and then you went to violin, and then the cello. What was it about the cello that you were like, this is my axe, this is where I'm going?
Well, actually, so I started on piano first because all good Chinese children play piano. So that was kind of a given starting at age 3. And then when I moved to America, my mom is a violinist. So I started the violin at age 6. But I was stuck on Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star for literally almost a year. There was something awkward about it. It wasn't natural for my body. So I really struggled. I practiced. I couldn't play it in tune. And then my dad was like, you know what? Maybe she should play the cello. And the cello, I actually progressed really, really quickly. We started on the Suzuki methods. Mm-hmm. And usually the standard way to do it is you do like one book per year. And I got through all 10 in the first, I think, like 6 months or
wow.
something. So it was, I think there are certain instruments and certain things that people are just naturally a little bit more, I don't know, something about
just
it.
Just the way you hold it maybe, or just
yeah,
the comfort?
Maybe. Like for me, it was just, violin just felt awkward for my body, you know, having like your neck tilted. Well, I guess now I have my neck tilted to the other side, but you know, just the positioning was a little bit awkward for me and it felt more comfortable.
Is there a 3/4 size cello?
I started on a baby cello. I think it might have been a quarter size or something, itsy bitsy, you know. So yeah, there's cellos for every size. It's never too early to start.
It's so nice, you know. You mentioned that you, before you started improvising, mm-hmm. you had actually written and composed, and now you're getting the opportunity to work with Hans Zimmer, John mm-hmm. Debney. Have you thought about film scoring? Have you been approached to
yes.
score a film?
Yes, actually. So recently, it was actually the very first film that I scored myself. It's a small film. It's about an hour and a half long. Indie project, a thriller that I just finished scoring last month. It hasn't come out yet.
Ooh.
Yeah. And then prior to that, I did have some additional composing credits on some like sci-fi channel movies and projects like that. Some trailers, you know, trailer music. And then I think the most recent scoring project was for Bentley. So I signed up partnership with them as an official brand partner, and I wrote the music for the 2018 Bentayga Hybrid, which is their new SUV. It's a hybrid
Amazing.
SUV. It's not yet available. It comes out this fall. So for the launch video, which debuted at the auto show, the Geneva Motor Show in Switzerland a couple
oh, cool.
months ago. Yeah, and I was actually there. I was able to, because we just randomly happened to be on tour at that time, and the one day off
Amazing.
Was the day of the, you know, the presentation by Bentley. I'm like, what are the chances? So I did that, and that was a lot of fun. And I also have some other projects in the works, which unfortunately, as we all know, yeah, I can't talk about it yet. But definitely, because composing is something I've always just done, you know, for fun. And then being given the opportunities, and I never really, really pursued it. Kind of like the accidental, you know.
You have happy accidents.
Yeah. I just write music, and then so brands and people have started to ask, hey, do you happen to write music? I'm like, yeah, I do. They're like, do you want to score this project? Sure, why not? Let's do it. You know.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Can you share the name of the thriller?
No, okay. I don't want to. Yeah, not yet. I think
top
it's just when these
wraps.
Things.
Please, Robert, you know how this works.
Oh,
it's okay. When these projects come out, I'm very active on social media. So the second anything is allowed to be announced, like it'll be.
I'm curious about one other thing before we move forward, which is you mentioned your band.
Yes.
Is there an actual band that? Is it signed? Is it unsigned? Is it performing as a band?
Yeah, well, I'm signed to Sony. I signed with them last year or a year and a half ago. So mm-hmm. Game On was actually my 10th album, but the first album on a label. So before that, I had my own label and I self-released and did everything myself.
Right.
But the band, no, I've been playing, the current guys that I play with, I've been friends with them for like a decade. You know, I'm a big believer in like loyalty and working with the same people. And so they used to play with me, you know, years and years ago for like $100 or even less sometimes, little club shows. And so it's really amazing to be able to do bigger shows now and to like, you know, have them come along. But they are, I do hire them, you know, so, and I've tried, actually, I think I've had 4 or 5 bands in the past. And it's different for everyone. But for me, I think because I have a very, for myself, a very clear vision of what I want to do. Some might call it bossy, see, but others might just say, I just have a clear vision. And sometimes I've found it very difficult when you have multiple people fighting over, you know, artistic ideas, musical ideas, you know, what you want to wear in the videos. And it just became this roundabout, you know, fights over things that shouldn't be. I felt like it was a waste of time.
Yeah.
And I find that this way of working, I can collaborate with other musicians, you know, on a one-off basis or on projects and whatnot. But I still retain control over my artistic vision. Yeah, and
creative differences.
That way.
Yes. You might be introduced to that a little bit more as you get into the film score.
Oh no!
Yeah.
Well, since we've already taken our break, I think we can just jump right into this. Tina, we play a game, and I hope you studied. There's no way to study.
I did not.
But it's sweeping the nation. It's sweeping the world. It's called Name That Score. Let's do it, Matt.
Get ready to play Name That Score! The film music game where a perfect score means you, yes you, could be a winner! Now let's play Name That Score!
Tina's a little freaked out.
My hands are sweating right now. I'm so scared. Oh no.
So these are all scores from movies that feature a strong female lead, most of them from the last 20 years, 30 years or so, fairly famous movies. There's a catch. We play them backwards.
Ah. So
you gotta try to listen to what these are. We do have multiple choices.
They're never too easy.
Okay.
Sometimes they sound the same, though. You'll
okay.
see.
So we have five famous film scores we play in reverse. Robert, Kenny, and Tina will all pick from three multiple choice answers. The last question's worth double. If anybody gets all of them right, we give away a prize on our Twitter account at ScoreThePodcast. If you mention hashtag name that score.
Name that score. And I have a technique that you'll notice, which is I let you go first as often as possible.
Okay.
So that I
We're
can,
trying to refrain from that.
So that I can maybe steal your answer.
Okay.
I
which
never
we found out last week, John Powell had a strategy of giving what he didn't think was the right answer.
Yeah, he was trying to throw us off.
And then Kenny and Robert would
take
both
the bait.
make a decision based on that. They'd say, well, I think John Powell would probably get that. So anyway, do with that what
I'll
you will.
I'll pretend I'm using that method in case I get them all wrong.
Very tricky.
Man, now okay. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll
so
jump into
exciting.
This. Question number one, is this music from Alice in Wonderland, 2010 by Danny Elfman, Titanic, starring Kate Winslet, by James Horner, or Brave, by Patrick Doyle?
Oh, I know it. I love this song.
It looks like Robert got it. He smiled immediately.
I not only got it, I paid for it. That would be Titanic.
I'm going to also go with Titanic. Is it the flute? What is that?
It's an Irish flute.
Irish flute.
We flew the guy in.
Eric?
He was his name might have been Eric. It might have been Jordan Bieber. I'm not sure. But it was a guy that we brought in to play.
Hell of an Irish flute player, that Jordan Bieber.
So we have two votes for Titanic.
Titanic, yes.
Titanic.
Yes. I used to play it on the piano and sing.
Points for everybody.
Yay.
There it is, Robert.
That's it.
How much did it cost?
Fly him in.
No, the whole shebang.
I can tell you exactly what it cost and how painful it was. $1,325,000.
This is for the score?
For the score.
Uh-huh.
And you'd say...
Iceberg right ahead.
Right. You'd say, wow, that's a lot. That score probably should have cost double that.
Mm-hmm.
But we did lots of things to cut corners.
Yeah, it did okay, that score.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It made $50 million. So that was a good one.
It's a good investment.
Yeah.
So everybody's perfect after one. We're moving on to question number two. Is this music from... We have three Best Picture winners for this one. Fargo, starring Frances McDormand, by Carter Burwell. Out of Africa with Meryl Streep by John Barry. And Million Dollar Baby, Hilary Swank, scored by... Do you know who scored that, Robert?
Lenny Niehaus?
Clint Eastwood is
Clint
the one
Eastwood.
Who's credited.
Clint works with Lenny.
And Jordan Bieber.
And Jordan Bieber. So it was a toss-up as to whether Lenny actually wrote it or Clint did, but we'll go, okay.
All right, so we got three. Fargo, Out of Africa, and Million Dollar Baby. Here we go. Robert's raising his arm.
He looks confident.
He did the Tiger Woods fist pump.
You go first.
There.
Carter Burwell, Fargo.
That's very confident. Robert, okay.
I'm going to pull a Robert and go with Robert.
Kenny, yeah.
Me too. Me three.
Points for everybody.
Yes. Keeping us alive.
What gave it away here, Robert?
There's a kind of minor sonority that Carter uses in this. Kind of a modal thing. Kind of a
Robert's feeling it. That's
kind
sure.
of a Bieberish thing to me.
So. All right. All right. Points for everybody on that
good.
One.
Well done, Robert Kraft.
You wish taking we charge had been rolling once. On that little dance he
won
just did,
one time.
Shuffle.
It was very emotional.
Being confident.
He was feeling it.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on. Question number three. Everybody's perfect so far. Gets a little bit harder here. Is this music from The Hunger Games, which starred Jennifer Lawrence, by James Newton Howard, Mulan, by Jerry Goldsmith, the animated film, or Moulin Rouge, Nicole Kidman, by Craig Armstrong on that film?
I'm going to go with Mulan.
Kenny's going Mulan.
I was
going to
say
Goldsmith.
Probably not Mulan, but I don't know. What do you think?
I am sandbagging.
Oh boy.
It's
Robert,
not,
you got to go first. Our guest has to have the most advantageous
position. I don't
think position.
It's Moulin Rouge because
I was going to say maybe.
Robert's ruling out Moulin Rouge.
Moulin and the first one was?
It's The Hunger Games, Moulin,
oh,
and Moulin
maybe
Rouge.
Oh, wait, I'm changing
Games.
It.
Hunger Games.
I'm going Hunger Games. I forgot about
I think
Hunger
it is
Games
Hunger
as an
Games.
Option. I knew it didn't sound Moulin Rouge-y.
I'll go
it sounded
Hunger
too
Games
action-y.
Too, just because. Because.
Everybody's going Hunger Games.
Yeah.
All right.
Uh-oh.
All yes. right. Yay. Points for everybody.
I was like, it's not Asian enough to be Mulan. Yeah.
I tried the John Powell approach there.
Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. Guys, it's obviously Mulan. Everyone guesses.
Come on. Everybody knows that. Yeah. All right. So everybody's perfect so far. We got two questions left and a bonus question, which is a tiebreaker if it comes to that. So question four. These are some kick-ass movies here. Mad Max Fury Road with Charlize Theron. Tom Hulkenborg, a.k.a. Junkie XL on that score. Wonder Woman. Gal Gadot, also Tom Hulkenborg, Junkie XL. This is from Batman v Superman. And then.
And Tina Guo.
Don't forget Hans.
And Hans. There's so many names. And Kill Bill, Uma Thurman by RZA, and Robert Rodriguez.
RZA.
The RZA.
That's the RZA, Matt. Come on, get your hip hop.
The RZA. The RZA was.
That's a real short clip.
I know the cue.
I think it's Pokemon now.
Nice. Sounds like.
Is it the red or the blue one? Tina? You're going, you're
think,
feeling
I,
confident
I think,
with that.
I think that might be me backwards. That's Wonder Woman.
I'm going to go with Wonder Woman.
What do you think, Robert?
Kind of Kill Bill meets Mad Max. I'm feeling
Mad
Wonder
Max,
Woman.
Huh? Oh, all right. Yep. Points for everybody.
One, two. What is it? Five or seven?
It's in seven.
Seven. I was going to say, I didn't get all the way to the seven because it's a short cue.
Yeah. Talking to the mic.
That
yeah.
was Robert not talking to the mic, us signaling him, and then blowing out your speaker.
That's
sorry
it.
About that.
Thank you.
Our last question now, our last regular question anyway, and then we have a bonus if we need it. This is... three fairly different movies. I think two of these are Oscar winners. The first one is this Frida, which starred Salma Hayek by L.A. Goldenthal. Very good. Sicario, starring Emily Blunt by Johansson. Or Gravity, starring Sandra Bullock by Stephen Price.
Robert is so pumped right now.
He has his thumb up in the air.
This is my around. This is the way, you know, like at the poker table where I try and give you guys a tell. Like I know what I'm doing, so I would get you to kind of stumble forward.
I'm going to go Gravity.
I really was going to say Gravity, only because it sounded kind of Gravity-esque.
I am going to have to agree and go Gravity-esque.
Yay. Oh, no!
Oh, no.
It's your fault.
It's your fault.
It's not. It's Sicario.
Oh.
Wow.
By Johan
Roberts. What was the thumb in the air? Was that?
It was kind of trying to win the game by get you guys to.
I thought for a second there Robert might have been employing that John Powell
thing. I was certain
that
was gravity.
Me too.
No. Sounded
gravitational.
The whole score is kind of like this. Very
I've never
sound
seen
designing. It's a great movie. I think the sequel's coming out here soon.
That was an intense movie. It's real intense.
Love the movie.
That bass. My headphones can't even handle that.
I know. All right, so nobody gets points for that one. But
man.
Guess what?
We're
all tied, so we have a bonus question here. Is this the music from Arrival, which starred Amy Adams, by Johan Johansson, Alien, starring Sigourney Weaver, by Jerry Goldsmith, or Contact, starring Jodie Foster, by Alan Silvestri?
I'm stressed.
Arrival, Alien, and Contact.
I'm stressed out right now. Robert, I don't believe anything you're doing anymore, by the way.
I'm just trying to deflect. Those are all really good
Remember,
scores.
We're going for a win here.
Going for the win. It was kind of a Arrival-esque Alien sort of Contact.
was that a response?
Well, they all have aliens in them,
They all have aliens. Mm-hmm. Yep. That was kind of... The flutes like going floovy is kind of a dead giveaway. Sort of felt like
a dead giveaway.
I don't think it's Jerry. How about that? I don't feel that it's Jerry in Alien. And I'm going Arrival.
I'm going to go Arrival.
Kenny and Robert both going Arrival.
Mm-hmm.
And Tina's well.
Arrival. Shot. You could,
Arrival.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
Does anybody want to change their guess?
Uh-oh. Oh. He did this one time before.
I'm going to change mine. Okay. I'm going to go.
Robert won the game last time when we changed this.
With Mother's Ball a couple weeks ago.
Yep. You want to hear it again?
After saying it's not, yes, I do. I have to hear it again because that will help me immensely. Jerry Goldsmith. Alien.
No, he probably got it right.
Matt, you used to throw us softballs, and now these are getting really hard.
Hey, you got the first four. You had a streak.
Maybe that floovy is kind of a backwards.
It's definitely not Jerry. Now you're saying it is Jerry.
Definitely not Jerry.
Robert's going Jerry Goldsmith.
Maybe if all three of us pick a different one, then there will be a
winner. I'll just stick with A. How's that?
What was the other one?
Arrival, Alien, Contact. And Contact.
I'm going to go with Contact. Let's mix it up here.
Okay.
All right, so everybody's picking a different title here.
What'd you pick?
Arrival.
We do have a winner. And it's Robert Kraft.
Oh, yay.
Man.
Floovy.
It is Jerry Goldsmith.
It's definitely not Jerry Goldsmith.
See, that almost worked.
That was a fake out. It was a John Powell fake out.
It actually wasn't known a better. John Powell fake out. I was actually thought that. Ooh, that's good. That's the bad guy coming in right down the hall.
Yeah.
That big,
it was
guy.
Very distinctive for the time.
Sigourney Weaver.
What do you think?
So our big winner is Robert Kraft.
That is so cool. That is like, thank you so much. You know what? I'd like to thank the little people.
Can you play some music to play him off?
It depends on how long this goes.
This speech.
What do you think? Should we give away the prize anyway?
We'll give one away
I'm
anyway.
I'm donating my prize to the lucky prize recipient. My signed
Game
Tina
on.
Game On swag.
Awesome.
To the lucky winner of
awesome.
Name That Score.
Awesome.
Who writes in.
All right. Well, that's very generous.
The you know what?
Studio audience loves that gesture.
Thank you so much.
There's so many people in here.
Real quick, before we go, I have a question I want to ask Tina about it. When we talked to John Powell last week, he talked about his dad played in the Royal Philharmonic,
mm-hmm.
and he brought up something that I hadn't thought about, but I guess this would be true. I want to run this by you. You would know. He said one of the biggest challenges when you're a expert player in any instrument is you got to be playing all the time. And that means if you take a couple weeks off, you'll come back and you'll feel rusty all of a sudden. Is that true?
It is true. I do try to maintain practicing, but now I do so many like sessions and whatnot, so at least I'm still playing.
Sure.
But for the most part, like before shows, 4 or 5 hours a day still. Not 8 hours, but...
Four or five hours.
hours a
day. Yeah, yeah, for the most part. And you definitely can tell, even after you don't practice for
what,
2 or 3 days.
What starts to go?
I feel like it's in, well, for me, for the cello, the fine tune, like the muscles in your hands, the tiny little muscles, the muscle memory starts going. Mm. But I also think, though, I am grateful that my parents made me practice so much, because if you practice every day for 8 hours a day from a very young age, what is it?
Good,
you know that?
Yeah.
So it's still in there, but it you can definitely tell if you don't practice for a couple days.
Yeah, my cello playing's a little rusty too, but then
I'll bet. I can't imagine the calluses too.
Sometimes I actually had a huge one on my pinky, which is documented on Instagram and Facebook.
Nice.
2 days ago, they got too big, so I like ripped the top layer off.
Lovely.
And now it's smaller again.
Is very
so
active
nice.
On social media too, if you want to check out
scars.
She posts a lot of cool videos and pictures of her journey. Where can they find you?
At Tina Guo. On Instagram,
easy enough.
On Twitter, on Facebook, YouTube.
Well, we want to remind our listeners, too, because we are giving away Robert so generously donating the prize he won.
Thank you. They love it. They love it.
Autographed copy of Tina's album, Game On. Make sure to follow us at Score the Podcast and use the hashtag #NameThatScore. Also, make sure to subscribe if you like what you're hearing on your favorite podcast platform. Rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
There you go.
Hey, I'm Robert Kraft, Kenny Holmes, Matt Schrader, and our fabulous guest, Tina Guo. We will see you next week.
Bye.